Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the Political Cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, another live installment of our award-winning show right now, Saturday evening, July 10th, 2010, red hot and rolling, unrehearsed and uncensored. We are the Political Cesspool, coming from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM, FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Joining me in the studio tonight, Keith Alexander. Keith, how are you?
Well, I'm rocking on ready again, ready to encounter another week full of cesspool garbage. You know, we're never disappointed. We never run out of things to talk about. The left just keeps dishing it up, man. We've just got an overwhelming amount of garbage to deal with every week, don't we, James?
We thought about naming this show the Political Garbage Dump, but the political cesspool kind of rolled off the tongue a little bit better. But like the garbage man in your neighborhood, each and every week, we find something to pick up here in the cesspool. We do. And a lot of energy we're bringing to the show tonight, Keith. And why not? The summer of 2010 will be remembered here in our studio as the summer of the cesspool. Keith, in the last 30 days, alone, we've released a critically acclaimed book, Racism Schmacism, to much press and great fanfare, broken an all-new story about Obama's birth certificate that has made national headlines from WorldNet Daily to The Globe magazine, of all places. We've been denounced by MSNBC host Keith Olbermann during one of his worst person in the world commentaries. And now, just this week, we have been attacked by an inglorious bastard. Eli Roth from the movie Inglorious Bastards has denounced the political cesspool. Indeed, Hollywood actor Eli Roth has condemned us via Twitter. Roth is best known for playing a savage Jewish soldier who, alongside Brad Pitt, graphically butchers scores of Germans for fun in Quentin Tarantino's Oscar-winning film. His ignorant attack of the political cesspool stems from the claim that Mel Gibson used, horror of horrors, the N-word, and the fact that Hutton Gibson's Mel's dad is a friend of ours who has appeared as our guest. But nevertheless, at our website, you can link over to Roth's official Twitter post. He is also the person responsible for writing and directing the sadistic Hostel movies. And he's also worked on assorted filth such as Cabin Fever and Grindhouse. But, Keith, as we've always said, we value the friends that we keep as well as the enemies that we keep. Being attacked by perverts like Perez Hilton and Eli Roth is something that men should take pride in. And we do. But the bottom line here, Keith, is whether it's Zionist attack organizations, the mainstream media, or the Hollywood elite, they all have their attention fixed to the political cesspool. We're a program of record that commands the constant attention of people like this. And that's something that I am very, very proud of.
There must be a reason why, in order to slander Mel Gibson, they link him with this program indirectly through his father. Now, let me just ask you, so we're on record about this, have you ever met Mel Gibson?
No.
Have you ever spoken to Mel Gibson?
No.
But nonetheless, they try to draw a bridge between us and Mel Gibson. Now, there must be a reason for that, and I think I know what that reason is. We give expression to the majority of red state America. We say the things that they have a conspiracy abroad not to have reached the light of day. We express the true feelings of the average middle American. Middle America is leaderless, basically, except for the political cesspool. That's why we draw so much attention from this leftist Jewish hierarchy, the ADL, the SPLC, Hollywood, Eli Roth. By the way, is Eli Roth an Irishman or an Italian, James?
I don't know if he's either, Keith, to be honest with you.
Well, I think he's probably a good son of Israel with that name. And it's time, we name names, we name them and shame them. We tell people who is responsible for the liberal takeover of America that is taking us to the bottom. You know, this very week, MSNBC and the New York Times said that America and the world is heading for the greatest depression that we've known since the depression in the early 1930s. Now, what has brought America to its knees? What is bringing the world to its knees? I've got it in one word, liberalism. Where does liberalism come from? What's the most liberal part of the whole white population in the world? It's the Jewish population. They are responsible. They've been at the forefront of every radical egalitarian left-wing movement that has ever existed in America since they came over in the second great wave of immigration, beginning in the 1880s and going until the mid-1920s. They're the reason we name them. Right now, if you listen to the mainstream conservative talking heads, people like Byron York, Laura Ingraham, others, the reason we've got problems, the big enemy of Western civilization is Muslims, horse feathers. We know what the problem is. The problem is Eli Roth and people like him. And, you know, they're really getting some chutzpah now. They used to kind of hide in the shadows and try to portray themselves as these poor, pathetic, oppressed people, you know, that were herded onto cattle cars in World War II, yada, yada, yada. Now they're making movies where they are murderous, homicidal maniacs like Inglourious Bastards. And, you know, they're basically telling the world what they have in store. You know, it's crazy. But, you know, it's there to be seen, and what stands in their way is basically the political cesspool and a few other outlets like us, the Occidental Quarterly, the Council of Conservative Citizens, European Americans United, a few organizations that are standing in the breach.
Well, Keith, you're absolutely right, and I will tell you this. Well, first of all, to talk about Inglourious Basterds, you know it's got to be pretty anti-American in order to garner 8 Academy Award nominations. It did win 1 Oscar. And, of course, Eli Roth, he played the character Bear Jew in the movie, and he was the most sadistic of the sadistic killers in that film. And now we've been picked up even on his radar. See, this is – I'm going to lay it to you straight, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to lay it to you straight right now with a great degree of candor. No paleoconservative entity has been attacked more over the course of the past 5 years than this show. We're newsmakers, a program of record that pound for pound gets more media attention than any of our contemporaries. We carry ourselves with class, and we produce good work. We've done it for 6 years, consistent, steady. Quite frankly, what we've been able to do here has not been duplicated. We stand toe-to-toe in the court of public opinion with some of the most lavishly funded opposition you could imagine, and we never blink. Unlike so many pretenders who do cower in fear, we have a fiercely defiant resolve that steadies us when the demons come. And I will tell you this now to Eli Roth and to everyone else who has announced this program. We will not surrender. We're time-tested, battle-proven, and our time is now. This radio program is uniquely positioned because of our reputation and because so many people have come to know us to move forward in ways bigger than we've ever thought possible. But we won't be able to do it without your help. Period.
Well,
you can't battle.
Do,
you cannot battle any longer. We cannot battle our enemies with one hand tied behind our back, Keith. Our enemies, your enemies, the enemies of Christianity and Western civilization have recognized us as the voice of European Americans. We will never be able to match the war chest of those who so often malign us. But the listeners of this show can help us bridge that gap. And that being said, I ask you to make a financial contribution to this radio program tonight. And I ask you to give generously. There's two ways you can help. You can go to the website and make a general donation, or you can buy my book. Both can be done at thepoliticalcesspool.org, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm telling you this. I'm asking you to show the Hollywood types like Eli Roth where your loyalties are. We need your help. Now is the time to stand and to be counted. And I stand with people like Hutton Gibson. Hutton Gibson is a 92-year-old gritty man who has been in this fight longer than I've been alive. I am proud to know him personally. That's Mel Gibson's dad. I am proud to stand with him, and I'm proud that he has stood with us even after he has come under attack. He has stood with us publicly and privately, and I'm thankful for my relationship with him. And if Mel Gibson is half as knowledgeable as Hutton, and I believe him to be, then he needs to stand up and be counted also, and I hope that he will. Keith, we got 30 seconds to break. Anything you can add to that?
Yeah, well, the thing about Mel and everyone else in Hollywood is that you see what comes from trying to appease the enemies of Gentile Christians in the world. It gets you nowhere. What you do is stand up, take them on, laugh at their vilifications, just like your recent book, Racism Smation, says, laugh when they call you racist, laugh whenever they slander you, because sticks and stones can hurt your bones, but words can never harm you.
Keith, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more right after this, and that's exactly the recipe we've used, and it's been very successful.
Coming your way right after these messages.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. News at the very top of the hour. The political cesspool can now add Hollywood actor Eli Roth of Inglourious Basterds fame to the list of those who stand against us, against America, against what this country was intended to stand for. We add him to the list of the Southern Poverty Law Center, by the way, incidentally enough, issued their 157th denunciation of our work as well this week in a article on their website that takes Mel Gibson to task, and of course they tie our program in with him via his father, who is a friend of ours. And so all that's breaking this week. It's been a very busy summer, very busy month in particular for our award-winning show, and our star continues to climb. We continue to rise, and we need your support to help us realize our full potential. We were talking about Eli Roth, of course, in the first segment, and the role he played in the film that we've been talking about. Plays a sadistic butcher. If you watch Hostel, a bunch of sadism and masochism in that movie, this is the kind of stuff that the New York Times, this kind of terrorism is the kind of stuff that the New York Times apparently finds romantic if and only if people of Jewish descent are the perpetrators. Keith, people might think that's an outlandish statement, that we're exaggerating to some extent. Tell them if I pretty much nailed it accurately there, and what was that article all about?
Well, you know that we have said for years that there's a double standard between Jewish terrorism and the so-called terrorism of other groups, Arabs, white Southerners, Germans, you name it. Everybody's bad except for Jews when they do it, or their minions like blacks. A perfect example is Nelson Mandela and Menachem Begin. But let's get to this story where the New York Times finally catches up with us, or at least follows the path that we've blazed for them. A little noticed comment in the New York Times interview with Israeli opposition leader Zippy Livni, how do you like that name, has critics arguing that it shows the media has a double standard when it comes to terrorism. In an interview published Tuesday, Livni, the leader of Israel's centrist Kadima Party, oh man, I love these names, they're great, boasted that her parents, both members of the Zionist militant group Irgun in the 1940s, were the first couple to be married in the newly formed state of Israel. Both of them were in the Irgun, Livni said. They were freedom fighters, and they met while boarding a British train. They probably blew it up. Okay. When the British mandate was here, they robbed a train to get the money in order to buy weapons. To which New York Times reporter Deborah Solomon, I'm sure another good daughter of Israel, responded, "It was a more romantic era. Yes, it was wonderful, apparently, when the Irgun, led by Menachem Begin, blew up the King David Hotel and killed 91 innocent people." And here's what came of this comment in the New York Times. "I've met interviewer Deborah Solomon, smart lady," writes Philip Weiss, again another Jew, who brought attention to the comment on his blog. I wonder whether she was annihilated, as I was, by Zionism, and to what degree. This is typically one-sided. Wise points out that Irgun, which was fighting for the creation of the Jewish state, was responsible for the bombing of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 1946. The attack killed 91 people, including U.S. and British nationals, and is believed to remain to this day the most deadly militant act of terrorism in history of the conflict between Israel and its neighbors. Jews blowing up buildings and robbing trains to get weapons to attack the government are freedom fighters, for those keeping score at home. And, of course, Nelson Mandela in Africa, in South Africa, was the head of the anti-apartheid movement, and he plotted the bombing of the Princes Street train station in which 18 innocent people were killed. What happens to Menachem Begin, who masterminded the King David Hotel massacre, and Nelson Mandela, and who masterminded the Princes Street bombing, both get the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, this is stranger than fiction. Meanwhile, white Gentile Southerners who killed far fewer Northern interlopers and Budinskis who invaded the South during the Civil Rights Movement, intent upon destroying the existing society and culture of the South in the 60s, were labeled terrorists who have never been eclipsed as a manifestation of pure evil. Of course, some of those Budinskis that were killed happened to be Jewish. I wonder what would happen today if some Americans of any race or ethnicity traveled to Israel, James, and began organizing Palestinian freedom rides across Israel.
I don't know if it'd go as well for them as it did the malcontents here in the South in the 1960s, I can tell you that.
And furthermore, they were accompanied by extensive international media coverage, just like the original freedom riders back in the early 60s were, to highlight the second-class status of Palestinians within the state of Israel. What if they began organizing Palestinian voter registration drives within Israel, which is what Swerner and Goodman were doing in Philadelphia, Mississippi, when they were murdered in the Mississippi burning murders? I guarantee you I've got the answer to that. I wonder how long these troublemakers would last if it were happening in Israel today. For your answer, confer the recent Gaza flotilla incident, James. Are you beginning to see a pattern yet?
I am. Keep putting the pieces together, Keith.
Okay. Well, consider this. Bobby Frank Cherry bombed a black church in Birmingham, Alabama during the Civil Rights Movement, which killed four innocent people. Edgar Ray Killen assisted in a plot that resulted in the deaths of three Civil Rights Movement workers, two of whom were Jewish red diaper babies, Michael Schwerner and Andrew Goodman. Now, Cherry and Killen are harried by numerous trials, were eventually found guilty. They were found not guilty or mistried several times previously, and were sent to prison as old men on walkers with oxygen tanks attached. Nelson Mandela and Menachem Begin, on the other hand, received the Nobel Peace Prize for their efforts, despite their checkered past. This should tell you all you need to know about the left. Equal justice and fair play, their constant mantras, are the furthest things from their mind, James. As James said in his new book, they play games where the rules are heads I win, tails you lose. They not only fail to punish or even denounce the bloody murderers in their ranks, they reward and lionize them while they pursue their enemies with relentless zeal, conducting Stalinist show trials to hammer home the lesson that no one bucks the leftist revolution and gets away with it. Soon, when all the old-timers have died off, the left will be reduced to digging up the corpses of their enemies and decapitating them, as the royalists did with Oliver Cromwell. This is standard operating procedure for the left. When liberals commit crimes, they are at worst innocent and at best heroes, while those who resist their leftist agenda are monsters. This is why James recommends that we laugh at charges of racism. Consider the unprincipled people who toss the charge around. I dare say Mandela and Begin have much more to answer for before the Almighty than Cherry or Killen. Of course, leftists don't believe in the hereafter, so there you are. What do you think, James?
I was talking with the producer, Keith, and getting a heads up on how much longer we had until break. But I think another dynamic piece of commentary by Keith Alexander. No, they don't believe in the hereafter, and that to me makes their actions a little more, well, perhaps a little less puzzling.
Well, just think about this. Why are the Mississippi burning murders so famous, far beyond all others in the Civil Rights era? Far more so than the Birmingham church bombing or Viola Louise's murder or some others.
Well, we know. I mean, that's a rhetorical question because the victims happened to be Jewish.
Well, two of the three were. And none of the other death incidents involved Jews, so they aren't important to the people that control our news media and academia.
Keith, hold it right there, my friend. Going to push pause for just a second while we take this break and listen to these words from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Political Cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
A couple of program announcements here before we move forward. Of course, I'm James Edwards, joined first hour by Keith Alexander. Last week, the third hour of the show, Eddie the Bombardier Miller had on tap for us a certain sheriff from Arizona who has been fighting the war to preserve America's cultural heritage, probably harder, certainly harder than any of us, and probably harder than just about anybody on the planet. Well, we had planned to have the sheriff on for the entire third hour last week, and he didn't call in. Well, he didn't call in because he was on an emergency call. He did call us immediately after the program when he got back to the office and gave us his apologies, which were, of course, unnecessary under the circumstances. Long story short, the sheriff will be with us tonight, or at least is scheduled to be with us tonight during the third hour. So just a little program note there to let you know what happened last week during that third hour and why we didn't have the guest that we had promised you. He has been rescheduled for tonight's show. So I tell you what, Eddie is so excited about this, as Keith can testify to. Eddie is so excited about this. He's pretty excited, isn't he, Keith?
Well, you told me he's riding to the sounds of the guns, as we used to say about our Civil War ancestors who fought for the Confederacy. He's headed down to Arizona. He's so taken with the plight of the sheriffs down there on the border that he's going to go down there and be a deputy.
Well, he hopes he can be a deputy. That isn't for sure yet, but the sheriff has told him that he can come along and witness and observe and ride along. So Eddie's excited about that. He's planning a trip down to the Southwest. And when he's there, his intentions are, and you'll get more information tonight during the third hour, his intentions are to do a live report from the border. Eddie the Bombardier Miller, I tell you, that's a man who puts his money where his mouth is, and that's the kind of people we like to surround ourselves. That's why he is on the staff of the Political Cesspool. So all that's coming up. Eddie's waiting in the green room for his hour. But when he comes up on the third hour, that's what we are planning to have on deck this evening. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. During tonight's second hour, coming up in just a few minutes, Don Wassel, the proprietor of Cast Football, www.castfootball.us, will be with us to talk about anti-white bias in sports. He's been with us a couple of times in the past, going to be making another appearance tonight. We're going to be talking about sports. We're going to be talking about the World Cup. We're going to be talking about LeBron James. We're going to be talking about football, everything.
You talk about a cesspool, there it is right there. And Eddie's going to be our man in Havana on the southern border of the United States there at Ground Zero, where the Arizona versus Obama controversy is going to be in full view.
Eddie's everything. We got such a great staff here, and we really try to live the life we present to you on the radio. In other words, we don't play characters. We apply ourselves Sunday through Friday every bit as much as we do on the air on Saturday. We're always looking to apply ourselves in a way that will help us reclaim America's destiny. So anyway, a big show tonight. Long story short, big show, second and third hour, Don Wassel, then third hour, Eddie Miller and the sheriff. I'll let him announce to you what sheriff it is when the time comes. Now, moving along this first hour, back to the table here. Some people in Kentucky, Keith, must have read my book. They must have read my book. More and more people are beginning to get it. The book, by the way, is getting rave reviews. If you go to Amazon, 5-star reviews all over the place, and none of them have been orchestrated by us. I promise you, we don't do that kind of stuff here. But more and more people are starting to get it. The word racist simply means white person, and it's time to stop running like a scared rabbit from the word. Homosexuals did it with queer, blacks did it with the N-word, and it's time white people did it with the R-word. The people in Kentucky that we've blogged about, they get it. They printed up some T-shirts that say on the front, "Yep, I'm a racist," and on the back they say, "Because," and then they list several things they believe, that they believe in, that people get called racist for these days. Things such as limited government, no bailouts, the Second Amendment, closing the borders, Jesus Christ, and several others. They're selling them at a fair in Lexington, Kentucky, a beautiful city, by the way, home of the Kentucky Horse Park that I had the opportunity to visit when I was campaigning with Pat Buchanan. Anyway, a local liberal columnist got wind of these T-shirts being sold at this fair in Lexington. He went over to hassle these folks, took his video camera, and he's appalled to find out that more and more white people refuse to be intimidated by the word racist. His hypocrisy is amazing. It's fine for liberals, such as himself, to call conservative white people racist all day long. But when those same white people wake up to what's going on and figure out the word racist just means a white person, he's outraged. That's because he's terrified of the word losing its power over white folks. That's the whole purpose that they use this slur against us, this baseless smear, to intimidate us into silence. That's what they're hoping for. That's what my new book, Racism Schmacism, is all about. And every conservative in America needs to read it. It couldn't be more timely. And you'll see more and more stuff like this, stuff that's going on here at the fair in Lexington, as conservatives start to wake up. So get a copy of the book today for your conservative friends and help them spread the word. But, Keith, I'm excited to see manifestations such as this taking place in the American heartland, places such as Lexington, Kentucky, people we've never met before selling T-shirts saying, "Yeah, I'm a racist because I believe in the Second Amendment, because I believe in Jesus Christ," so on and so forth. They are doing what we're trying to do here, and that is defang the term coined by Trotsky himself, mass murderer Leon Trotsky, trying to defang it once and for all so it doesn't inhibit us from going out and accomplishing our goals. These people are doing it, Keith.
Of course, don't forget that Trotsky was Jewish, too. That's why most American communists in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s were deemed Trotskyites rather than Stalinists because they wanted to line up with their co-religionist, Leon Trotsky. Now, this is right on cue, what they're doing in Lexington, Virginia. I mean, Kentucky. It's just exactly as if they had read your book. Because, and this is why this left-wing commentator is so upset. We're digging too close to where the bodies are buried now. We know what their key is, and if they can't get the upper hand on us psychologically, they know they can't defeat us. And we're tired of being pushed around. This is why it's so dangerous for these phony neoconservatives to keep trying to pander, like Glenn Beck, Laura Ingraham, and other people, to the left's idea about the civil rights movement. For example, Laura Ingraham on her show this week was saying that abortion is racist, and that's how we're going to defeat abortion. Abortion affects per capita more black people than white people. They have abortions at 3 times the rate, and therefore that's why we can now hold our heads up high and say we're opposed to abortion. Because it was a product of a group of pernicious honkies. Only the pernicious honkies this time are liberal honkies rather than the typical left-wing interpretation, which has the villains being conservative honkies. People need to wake up and, you know, just tell Glenn Beck, Laura Ingraham, and people like that, "You're all wet. This isn't flying. We're not ashamed to be white. We're proud to be white. We have every reason to have the same sense of racial solidarity that every other racial group and ethnic group has, and we're not buying it anymore." And these T-shirts and your book are two manifestations of that outlook, James.
Well, Keith, I appreciate that, and I tell you, you know, I don't know who possesses a bigger threat to our people. Is it people like Eli Roth, the enemies we know, the Hollywood types, people like Keith Olbermann in the mainstream media, or the so-called mainstream media, people at these attack organizations like the SPLZ? Are they the biggest threat, Or is it people like Laura Ingraham? You know, you had called me earlier in the week. People like Glenn Beck, people who give you just and sprinkle just enough truth into their message to believe that they are your champion. When at the very end they're going to lead you in a circle at best, certainly not to the place you need to go. That's where we're going to lead you, and that's why I think we have become so feared.
Nose in the tent, James. If you let the liberal camel's nose in the tent, if you accept the liberal truth of the civil rights movement, if you assume that they are right about that, then they've got the moral high ground, and you're constantly cutting and covering, trying to apologize for yourself and your ancestors. And the truth of the matter is there's nothing to apologize for. They were right. Our ancestors were not inferior to us. They were superior to us. And it's moral arrogance to pretend otherwise.
Keith, it is, I think, a great deal of what motivates us to do the work that we do here on this show is to, in some small way, try to live up to the sacrifices made by our ancestors. The best we can do here at the Political Cesspool, and I think that we have really forged an organization here that is very revered in paleoconservative circles and very hated in the circles of those who oppose the American experiment, and that's exactly where we want to be. But the very best of our efforts is filthy rags compared to the efforts of men like Robert E. Lee and the people that we hold to such high regard. But we still try. We're still trying, and we're still fighting, and we're going to continue to do that. One more break. We'll be back right after this.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, speaking from the heart, you will never truly know how proud I am to serve as your host, to serve as the host of the Political Cesspool radio program. Of course, I'm biased. I've always had a little more respect for a singer who is also a songwriter than someone who just goes out and sings songs that other people have written. And the reason I say that is because I guess there are probably more talented hosts out there than me, but this show holds a special place in my heart because I created it. It was my vision. This show and everything that we've accomplished over the course of the past 6 years was something that I was lucky enough to have put together. I saw a need for a show such as ours. I saw that there was a void to be filled, and I went about creating something that I hoped would stick. And thankfully, thanks to your support, it has. And so I have the unique perspective of not only being the host, but the creator of this radio show. And you know, being attacked by people like Eli Roth, well, I wouldn't trade that for $1,000. We need money. I mean, don't get me wrong. We need money in order to keep the show on the air, and I hope that you will donate to this radio program tonight even.
Well, what
but,
it shows,
but the
James,
thing is, Keith, the thing
is,
I say that to say this. I had said in the last segment that all of that really pales in comparison like filthy rags to people like Davy Crockett, the heroes of our antiquity. But there are also some contemporary heroes that I don't think we can hold a candle to, and you wanted to elaborate a little bit more on that before getting on to our next topic.
Right. We were talking about how ancestors like Robert E. Lee and Davy Crockett give us no occasion to be embarrassed about our ancestry. I'd come back to something even nearer than that. According to the Jews that run the news media and academia, we should be ashamed of the people that resisted the civil rights movement, people like Senator James Eastland and John Stennis of Mississippi, Senator Richard Russell of Georgia, and a whole panoply of people. Well, let me tell you, folks, the verdict is in, history is in. Unfortunately for the left, they were right. The precipitous decline in American public education since the Brown decision shows that these men, Eastland, Stennis, Russell, the whole group of them, were absolutely right to oppose Brown and school integration. It's been nothing but an unparalleled disaster. We've gone from being at the top of the developed world to the bottom of the developed world in public education precisely because of the left's meddling with the local affairs of local school boards through Brown and various other court decisions and also legislation that followed up on it. Secondly, and this I think is probably even more important than the fact that we did that, we had the Immigration Act of 1965. Guess who this is what gave preference to third worlders immigrating to America rather than Europeans like the existing stock of America. People forget now that in 1960, 90% of Americans were white. Well, who were the core of the people opposing that law? With Ted Kennedy and Emanuel Seller and people like that supporting it, it was the Southern Caucus, these very same people like Stennis, Eastland, Russell. In other words, these guys were right. If the rest of the country had known and followed their wisdom and insight, America would not be in the sorry condition it is now, and we're right. According to MSNBC and the New York Times, we're on the brink of a Great Depression. And if they take away the status of the dollar as the world's reserve currency, we're going to be third world people. And meanwhile, we're interested in things like LeBron James.
Oh, don't get me started. we have Don Wassel coming up, and we're going to be talking with Don Wassel about a variety of politically related sports issues, one of which will be the LeBron James affair, which, by the way, we blogged about. In fact, everything that we talk about on this show, we anchor on our website with references and links that you can research for further information. We encourage you to do that, and we encourage you to visit our website at thepoliticalcesspool.org, www.thepoliticalcesspool.org, to read more about any of the issues we raise on the air, one of which is the previously mentioned LeBron James affair. I don't know how many of you paid attention to the boorish one-hour ESPN special this week in which LeBron James announced the next basketball team he was going to play for, but it was an unprecedented production of a simple routine free agency announcement. They call him King James. He's the most overhyped player, in my opinion, in NBA history. They call him King James, but he's never won. Well, he is that, but he's never won a championship. They call him King James. I call him the Lord of No Rings. He's been in the league 7 years. He wins all the MVP awards, but he's never won a championship. He's never even won a game in the finals. But the point of it all is this. I had thought about writing an article about this self-serving spectacle that the king put on here, but really didn't know how best to approach it. Thankfully, some other people did the work for us. It's a blog entitled Stuff Black People Don't Like, and we linked up to their report. You got to check it out. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org to read it. But the bottom line is this. The NBA is bankrupt, morally and financially. The NBA had to go to J.P. Morgan and Bank of America to borrow $500 million because all their teams are losing money. And
of course, they couldn't ask their stars like LeBron James to take less money. You think that they had a great riot in Oakland lately about the decision of a court letting a white suspect off in a killing of a black man. I mean, if they had tried to cut the salaries of LeBron James and people of his ilk in the NBA, I mean, you have never seen bloodshed. And I've got my own idea, James, about why LeBron James's Much Ado About Nothing affair took center stage in the American sports world last week. It's because at the same time, the legitimately biggest sports story every 4 years that comes up is the World Cup. And in this year's World Cup, it's not a story of black or non-white dominance. It's a story of white dominance. Three of the top four teams were white nations with predominantly white teams, and the one team that was non-white, Uruguay, wound up losing its semifinal match today. So that means the top three teams in the world are white, and this is something that the Jewish cadre at ESPN just could not allow to be broadcast across headlines and to take center stage on sports, so they concocted this whole much ado about nothing affair about LeBron James's decision about where he was going to play. I've never seen anything like it. This is the ultimate expression of the bread and circuses society that we have come to be here in America today.
We're going to be talking about it a lot more with Don Wassel, not just about LeBron James, but, as I said, a variety of politically related sports issues, including the World Cup and many more. You're going to want to stay tuned for the rest of the show, for that matter, the second hour with Don Wassel, the third hour, Eddie Miller, and the sheriff. We'll let you know which sheriff when he comes on in the third hour. Big show forthcoming still in the second and third hour. I think Keith and I have done a bang-up job, if I do say so myself, in getting things kicked off this evening, but a lot more to come. I enjoy having Don Wassel on. He comes on a couple of times a year. He's the only man out there covering these issues as they pertain to sports. So we're going to dig a little deeper, talk more about all of this with him. But the bottom line is this, Keith, what I find so disturbing about the LeBron James affair this week is that America's falling apart. Western civilization is falling apart, and hundreds of millions of white people are living vicariously through a man who couldn't care less about them, as he proved beyond a shadow of a doubt to the fans of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who he left high and dry. He was born there, went to high school there, was drafted by them, and just left them to go party in Miami. Well, the bottom line is this, though.
BS walks, James.
Huh?
In the modern sports world, money talks and BS walks. And
well, I mean, but that's the thing is, though, Cleveland was offering him $130 million.
Well, I know, but see, that's not enough for a man with the ego the size of LeBron James. I've harked back to a lot of old tapes I have of, for example, the 1970 Sugar Bowl that a friend sent me. And when you compare the caliber of the athletes, not just as athletes, but as human beings that played back then, and compare them with the people that are dominating professional basketball and professional football today, it's a Hyperion to a Satyr, as Hamlet said. These people that played in that Sugar Bowl game, for example, went on to be doctors, lawyers, accountants, city managers, general contractors, police chiefs, people that are totally admirable, totally worthy of admiration and recognition. And then you see people like LeBron James, who, quite frankly, is one of the better people. Think of people like Dennis Rodman. Think of, a whole variety of people that have played in the NBA. We had a blog entry recently about a guy that had played, I think his name was Ray Williams, 10 years with the Celtics, who's now living in a broken-down car.
Well, Keith, I'm going to be living in a car if I don't pay the bills here. We got to take a break. I love you, buddy. Thanks for your time and efforts tonight. We're going to listen to a few words from our sponsors and be back with more in the second hour. Don Wassel on deck.
Appreciate it, man.
In the First Self-Righteous Church, in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula, it was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.